I'm Lou Larinian. Joining me today is Matthew Keller, Vice President of Democracy 21, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to making democracy work for all Americans by eliminating the undue influence of big money in American politics, preventing government corruption, empowering citizens and political process, and ensuring the integrity and fairness of our government decisions and elections. Thanks for making time for me today, Matt. How you doing?
Thank you very much.
Yeah, great. You know, tell us just a little bit about yourself and how you came to work with Democracy 21, which I guess was founded in 1997.
Yeah, I had been the legislative director at Common Cause from 1996 to about 2003, 7 or 8 years. And I worked very closely with John McCain and Russ Feingold and others on the McCain-Feingold bill, which at the time was kind of the big campaign finance reform bill, and, you know, had worked on Capitol Hill prior to that, and then left to do international work for, like, it kind of took a 20-year detour. I was with the United Nations World Food Program, and then I led something called the Global Learning X Prize in Tanzania for about 6 years, and then decided to go back to what I thought was the most important thing I could possibly work on after, you know, doing the international stuff for 20 years. I just realized that what's happening here in the United States is something that needs to be addressed, and I want to use all my energy on that. So I work very closely with Fred Wertheimer, who's the founder and CEO of Democracy 21, and is kind of a legend in the reform field in Washington, D.C. He's been doing this for 50 years, so it's just a pleasure to work with him and to be back on the show.
Yeah. Okay. No one can deny the importance of fixing the country's infrastructure or broadening the social safety net. All important bills. But without free and fair elections, does any of it matter? What is happening with the Freedom to Vote Act currently stalled in the Senate? And why is it critically important that it's passed now and soon?
So the Freedom to Vote Act has passed the House of Representatives and is in the Senate and is waiting for movement on the floor, and we are at a place where we are on the cusp of passing this, and what is to be worked out is whether or not the Senate will reform the filibuster in a sense or do something special with the filibuster for the sake of democracy for this bill. And that's the conversation that's happening, and, you know, we are very hopeful. Senator Manchin from West Virginia is a sponsor of the bill. He put the provisions in that he thought were most important, and, you know, we think he's right. And so he's a real champion, and now is working with Senator Schumer and others to figure out how do you either carve out or actually strengthen the filibuster in a way that not only gets this across the line, but makes the Senate more functional. Because right now, the way the filibuster works, it just fosters dysfunction in the United States Senate. So it's actually an opportunity to not just pass the Freedom to Vote Act, but actually to potentially make the filibuster stronger.
You know, get off track just a little bit. You recently wrote an op-ed, you know, that compared President Joe Biden with John Kennedy's position, you know, the situation facing Joe Biden right now with John Kennedy's position in the 1960s that led to the passing of the Civil Rights Act. You know, what did Kennedy observe that serves as, I guess, sort of a bitter irony of the recent democracy summit held by Biden?
Yeah. Yes, the bitter irony indeed. I mean, Kennedy was a real cold warrior, right? I mean, he really wanted to confront the Soviet Union in the sense of expanding kind of American democratic values abroad. And he talked about it extensively in his inaugural address. His administration was focused in large part on international affairs, particularly the expansion of, you know, freedom and democracy abroad. But, you know, he realized, I think very smartly, that unless you could fix what was happening with the civil rights movement at home and expand the opportunity to vote for African Americans, that he couldn't, you know, address the expansion of freedom and democratic values abroad, because the hypocrisy would be too high. And so he had even sent his Secretary of State, Dean Rusk, to testify in 1963 about his civil rights bill and framing it as, we have to do this in order to to be the moral actor in the world. And you know, Kennedy made a speech, called it a moral issue, and set the stage for what, you know, after his death became the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And what I did in my op-ed, and I said, you know, President Biden, you're having this democracy summit, but you've got to look at what's happening here at home. I mean, our house, our own house is on fire, and you got to put it out, and you got to rebuild it before we can start, you know, advocating for what we would like to see abroad until we do that at home. So that was the point of the op-ed.
Yeah. You know, what could or should President Biden do to, you know, pass these protections to, I guess, I would call them our most fundamental right, the right to vote.
Yeah, no, it is a fundamental right, and I there's no doubt about it. I mean, President Biden can use the bully pulpit more than he has. I mean, I know that he's been focused on Build Back Better and the bipartisan infrastructure bill, but this is, you don't just sit on the sidelines on this. You got to engage in a very expansive and, I would say, dramatic way. And as a creature of the Senate, you know, I think he is well positioned to help facilitate, an approach to the filibuster for this issue and others that may be really effective. I think he should talk about it more. I think he should work the Senate more. Again, he's a creature of the Senate. And when Johnson became president in 64, as a creature of the Senate, he worked the Civil Rights Act. I mean, like, it was nobody's business. He understood how the Senate works and spent months and months and months strategizing and preparing for what eventually became, you know, the Civil Rights Act, and that overcame, I think, a 90-day filibuster. So that's what I'm asking him to do. And I just don't see it. I just don't see it happening. And the administration has got to do more.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, I believe there were a lot of people in the country, sort of tuned off the blah, 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 and that sometimes somebody with the bully pulpit, like the President of the United States, needs to hammer it and hammer it every day. I mean, he should, you know, I know he likes to end every speech with, you know, as rightly should, you know, thanking our, you know, men and women in the military around the world. But, you know, he ought to add a little something in there about protecting the vote every time he talks about everything else.
Yeah, because it is, without that, there's nothing. I mean, that's it. And you know, the thing is, Lou, all this stuff that's happening in the States, all the attack on making it harder, making it harder to vote across the country, it's all premised on this lie, the big lie that Trump has told over and over and over again since November of last year, which is that the election was stolen, that it was rigged, that Joe Biden stole it. And that's why you have so much unrest in the country over these issues, because it's premised on that big lie. And people, unfortunately, are buying it. And it's not good. It's not good for democracy. It's not good for the country. That's the root cause of it.
Yeah, and it just, you know, it seems to be, you know, to me that, you know, I guess, you know, the poster boy for this sort of strategy was Donald Trump, you know, to be able to bend things that, you know, we used to be, I guess, a gentleman's country, where there are gentlemen agreements within government and people did things for the good of the good, and there was some morality there, you know. But I think Donald Trump was, you know, the first one to, well, not the first one, but, you know, took great advantage of the fact that, of where there were no written down rules, you know, to sort of push stuff to his advantage. And Mitch McConnell is doing kind of Mitch McConnell was actually doing it way before Trump even came around, you know. Yeah. I mean, who can ever forget Merrick Garland, you know?
Well, McConnell,
because that wasn't a law.
No, exactly. I mean, McConnell's been fighting this since he was in diapers. I mean, he's been fighting voting expansion and campaign finance reform. I was a young Senate staffer in the late 80s. I think I started on the Hill from 88 to 90, 87, 92 or something like that. McConnell was a freshman. I remember watching him, you know, argue against motor voter, which is just basically making it easier for people to register to vote once they get their license. And just going full out as a freshman senator on the evils of motor voter, which was just so blatant in his attempt to deny certain people, you know, the easy availability of registering to vote. And I don't want to compare him to Johnson in terms of being a master of the Senate, but unfortunately he is a master of the Senate and is kind of, I think, in my opinion, has ruined the United States Senate and has made it dysfunctional, and it has made it not a great place to be. But, you know, you talked about destroying those norms and morality. I told you earlier in the interview that I worked on, you know, closely with John McCain for years when I was a Common Cause. You know, McCain, a Republican, would get up on the Senate floor and say, you know, the system in Washington, D.C. is corrupt and it's immoral because it's awash in a sea of special interest money. And not only does that drown out the voices of ordinary citizens, it dishonors me personally, McCain would say. Like, where is that? You know, what happened to that? And that's the thing I really miss, is that both sides of the aisle understanding it's not just a procedural problem. It's a moral issue, as Kennedy laid out in 1963. So Trump's destroyed a lot of that. McConnell has aided and abetted in every way he possibly can. But Trump destroyed the kind of the morality behind a lot of this stuff, and in ways that you just described, you know, these once where people agreed amicably and would try to compromise, that no longer exists. And I think that's in large part because of him.
Yeah, and if you're just tuning in, I just want to remind you, you're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WVPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. I'm speaking with Matthew Keller, who's the vice president of Democracy Now!, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that is dedicated to making democracy work for all of us. And we're talking about the filibuster. As those paying attention to such things know, a lot of state legislatures are controlled by Republicans now, who are in the process of drawing up new district maps based on the new census. What sort of shenanigans can this lead to without some oversight? I mean, after 2013, when SCOTUS gutted the Voting Rights Act of 1965.
Yeah, that was a big deal. That was Shelby County, the Holder case in 2013, which basically gutted Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, you know, which mandated that states, you know, get cleared before they change their voting laws. And wouldn't you know it, after that was thrown out, lots of states, particularly in the South, changed the voting laws to make it harder. So you've got a slew of states controlled by Republicans trying to, you know, just a few examples, shorten the window to apply for a mail ballot, you know, limit ballot, mail ballot drop boxes, restrict assistance in returning voters' mail ballots, eliminate sending mail ballots, to voters who don't specifically request them, makes it harder to remain on absentee ballot lists. Just things that make it so all the things that happened in 2020 that made it easier to vote, and the election, according to everybody who watched it, was probably the fairest and cleanest election ever. It had the highest turnout in so long. They're trying to turn that all back. And what we're trying to do with Freedom of the Vote Act is say, no, you know, sorry, you can't do that. There's got to be a uniform set of laws across the country when it comes to voting for federal elections, because the inequality that exists in terms of those laws in all 50 states is pretty stunning.
Yeah, you know, as you pointed out about Mitch McConnell, and he's not alone in his party, you know, Republicans have, you know, tacitly and some obviously acknowledged that they could never win an election if without voter suppression, you know, if everybody really was allowed to vote. You know, which is like, you know, kind of an indictment of their policies, I guess.
Well, Trump himself said that. Trump said if you have these laws, Republicans will never be elected again.
Yeah. That's right. So I guess, you know.
Which by the way, though, is not true, because you think of, like, say, where you are, the elderly population in Florida. You know, I would assume many of them aren't, you know, Democrats or liberals. But a mail-in ballot makes it easier for them to vote if you're over the age of X or if you're infirm. So that, it just doesn't make any sense to me, you know?
No, it doesn't. And, you know, like, the fact of the matter is, you know, you're right. You know, here in Florida, you know, which does have an elderly population. You know, we just very recently went over, I guess, the, you know, threshold to become a majority Republican state. For years and years and years, it was a Democratic state, and that lead has, you know, diminished, even though
yeah.
a lot of people are independents. But you're right. You know, when they, when, you know, mail-in ballots used to, you know, are and would be really popular among all seniors of
yeah.
ilk. And so to say that mail-in ballots, but that, you know, as we know, though, that's a Trumpism. You know, he was saying that, fearing what was going to happen, and so that he could play his little strategy game like he did try to do in Pennsylvania, you know, and claim
right.
that, oh, there must be something wrong because I was leading, and then all of a sudden I wasn't leading, and they just
right.
found a bunch of ballots. You know, it's like no, come on.
this is regular.
This just happened, you know. So.
Yeah, and he set the stage for it months in advance. Oh, you're gonna see fraud like you've never seen, and it's all rigged and all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. And it's fruit of the poison tree. All this stems from the big lie, and the big lie was that the election was stolen. And now you've got something like 60% of registered Republicans believe that, maybe 68%. So that's kind of where we are. And so the Freedom to Vote Act would set those baseline standards, would make it easier for people to vote, and would have some great campaign finance reform provisions in it that I think would go a long way in terms of, you know, making it easier for people of average means to run for office, would force disclosure for folks that spend a lot of money on electioneering. Things that, you know, when Trump talks about draining the swamp, these are the things that actually could help drain the swamp. And shouldn't be partisan at all. And when you look at the polling for the Freedom to Vote Act across the country, it polls really well with independents, Republicans, and Democrats. These are not partisan issues outside of Washington.
I don't know anybody in this country that doesn't, you know, or haven't met anybody in my years, regardless of political affiliation, that doesn't heartily agree that probably the greatest thing about America is that it's one person, one vote. That doesn't always show, you know, that there have been manipulations, that basic premise is that's a great thing, you know, that,
yeah.
you know, I mean, to do the best for the majority is a great idea, you
yep.
know, so,
yep.
You know, so to protect the vote now, you know, it seems to me, I guess, as we're getting down to this, is abolishing the filibuster, you know, or carving out some sort of special deal again this time is in Fred had something on your site that pointed
yeah.
out that, you know, that the two greatest pieces of legislation that have passed in the last 30 years were carve outs of the filibuster, right?
Well, and we did a timeline going back to 1806. So this is filibuster, I think something like it's been amended or changed or, you know, like 160 times since 1968. And you go back to 1806 and it's not a sacrosanct thing. It's not, you know, you don't genuflect at the altar of the filibuster. It's a rule made by mortals that can be changed and you can force people to talk and then you can whittle it down from 60 to 55 to 50 or, you know, have them, you know, set a time limit on how much debate there can be and talking and talking and talking and then have a majority vote. There are lots of ways that you could actually keep the filibuster but strengthen it in a sense. And by doing that, you strengthen the Senate. And I think that's where we're getting to. You know, if you look at some of the statements some senators have made lately, Senator Tester from Montana and Senator Kaine from Virginia, Senator Warner from Virginia, you get the sense that we're close. I mean, I'm actually pretty hopeful here.
Yeah, it's hard to deny that you know it's been abused and just basically it's been a tool of obstruction. It's crazy. I mean, it's gone past fodder for editorial cartoons about how
yeah.
you know, the minority is like running the show. And how, as a matter of fact, it was like some story I read this morning. People refer to Joe Manchin as President Manchin, sort of tongue in cheek. But you say you were seeing some signs that this may break. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you see the statements coming out in the last few days about how we have to get this done as a country, and not just as a party, but as a country. And you see that from, pretty moderate Democrats in the Senate who've never really been champions of, reform of this kind in terms of the filibuster. Senator Warner from Virginia, Senator King from Maine, Senator Tester from Montana. And Senator Manchin said the other day, I think it was just yesterday or 2 days ago, that he's open to discussion on this. And that's a big deal. And, I think I have faith in him because, he's a former Secretary of State of West Virginia and was a champion of access to voting and understands the mechanics of it and sees that there's a problem. So, given those statements, given what he said, given where we are, that every single Democratic senator has co-sponsored the Freedom to Vote Act, we're on the cusp of passing the most transformational reform and voting legislation since Watergate,
well,
since 1974.
Yeah. I guess another solution, candidates, or people who have expressed interest in running for the Senate, Democratic candidates, who have decided to make this an issue,
mm-hmm.
voting to get rid of the filibuster. I mean, is that going to be, if we can get past 2022 and perhaps, not because they're better or worse, we get a stronger Democratic majority in the Senate, could that help solve this problem? Because it seems like, if voting rights are not reformed, this juggernaut could become authoritarian.
That's the heart of the matter. If we don't do this, we're in big trouble.
Because if these things don't get reformed, at least the way I understand it, there's a bunch of legislations that if they had the rules they have in place now in the 2020 election, they could have sent a different set of electors.
And that's
on January 6th.
Right.
Yeah.
And so this is, what happens.
Yeah.
What happens when that happens? And it's not good. Some of the subversion stuff the states have been engaged in terms of passing bills and, in Georgia, they give the state election board, a newly created board, the ability to suspend county election officials, which may allow Republican-controlled boards to install Republican partisans to oversee the actual counts themselves. So that's not just suppression, that's subversion. And when you have a Republican legislature who has the ability to overturn and fire the decision of local county officials and replace that person with one of their own appointees, you've gone into a whole different kind of territory here. That's where we are.
And on that note, I want to thank you, Matthew Keller, from Democracy 21, for making time for us today. And we will all be tuned in and waiting and hoping that Joe Manchin does the right thing and that the Voting Rights Act does, in fact, get passed. At least I think that's partisan, maybe, but not partisan.
I'm exactly.
An American. That's an American.
Exactly.
Thing.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
So,
well, thank you. I appreciate it. I really do.
Yeah, and tell our listeners, if they want to learn more about, this issue and other important issues that Democracy 21, covers and supports, like campaign finance reform, let them know where they can go.
Yep, you go to democracy21.org. And anything you ever wanted to know about voting and reform and what we do, it's right there. That's democracy21.org.
Beautiful. Thanks again, Matthew. You have a great day.
All right. Thank you, too. Take care. Bye-bye.